Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is time for Joe Sheehan here on Joe Day. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Joe, these are interesting times for the Chicago Cubs, and just when they think they've got something fixed, something else tends to break. How should they go about this sort of home maintenance, as it were?
The thing that they need, probably more than anything else, is a power lefty out of the bullpen. I know a lot of people are focused on a bat. I'm not sure how you fit a bat in, but the thing that there is more of just about anything else right now on the market is relievers. I think if the Cubs want to go out and get two guys to bolster that bullpen. And remember, they thought they'd done that with Kimbrel, and I think they still lead certainly at least one lefty, maybe one other guy. You look at the underlying numbers. The ERA isn't bad. The FIP isn't bad. They're middle of the pack, and they're the only contenders with worse bullpens are the Braves and the Nationals. But when you actually start to look at what they do, the bullpen has the second worst strikeout rate in the league. It's got the highest walk rate in the league for what feels like the 16th or 17th straight year. This has been a problem for this bullpen, even when they were good. Their bullpen was walking a lot of guys. The Cubs have really never had that during this run, had that, Herrera, Davis, Holland type of back of the bullpen, or the Nasty Boys, or some of the pens the Yankees have put together. It's always felt like a patchwork thing, and some days it goes like it did last night in San Francisco.
You're saying Clayton Richard and Trevor Cahill leading up to Hector Rondon at the end of 15 wasn't a knockdown Quantrill Moda thing?
Hey, it got them within four games of the World, four wins of the World Series anyway. But this has been an issue. And this gets back to, I feel like this is a motif that, guys, we keep coming back to. The Cubs' inability to generate these random pitchers. I don't mean random in the sense that, like, Aaron Bummer's come out of nowhere for the White Sox. But most teams have live arms in their system that if they wash out as starters, go to the bullpen and can provide some innings, can provide some strikeouts. And the biggest weakness of what's been a very strong front office since Theo and Jed got there has been the development of pitching. They just haven't brought up these, kind of the failed starter who goes to the bullpen and gives you 60 good innings. You look at this bullpen and it's all imports. And, of course, you talk about the trade market, it's going to continue to be imports. And I don't see failure, because failure is not really the word I'm looking for here, but it's just where other teams have 150 innings of guys like that every year, the Cubs have had none for 4 years now.
It's interesting you put it that way, Joe, because you look at Tyler Chatwood. He is a failed starter that they signed to be a starter. Would you put the, like you said, you don't want to say necessarily it's their fault, but would you put the burden, the onus of not being able to make Tyler Chatwood into a better reliever on the Cubs, or would you, split that around?
I don't know. I mean, Tyler Chatwood is what he is. Even when he was good, he was somebody with a high walk rate. And again, he's somebody who, the ERA is serviceable this year, but you look at the underlying numbers and they're just not there. 36 strikeouts, 26 walks. Starter, reliever, there's no role in which I can use you with a strikeout to walk ratio like that. It'd be nice if the team could turn Tyler Chatwood into a guy who walks, 8% of the hitters he faced, and now all of a sudden you've got an effective two-inning reliever. But I don't think I want to put too much blame on the team for not turning that particular – well, I don't want to use that metaphor in the air, but we'll just leave it at that.
You mentioned Bummer on the White Sox. Colome is the other guy that everybody's looking at. It's obvious that the White Sox have to be in some kind of sell mode here, yet Colome's got another year on his deal, which means maybe they can exact a little bit higher price for him. They still got to move him, though, right? Doesn't that get you closer to winning a World Series?
Yeah, especially since I don't know that the 2020 White Sox are going to live or die based on whether they have Alex Colome or not in his 65 innings.
Right.
I will also say, too, it's a smarter industry than it used to be. You're not making deals off of baseball card stats. But you look at Colome, and it's an ERA of around 3 with 21 saves. You can sell that and maybe get people to not look at what is a really pedestrian strike, actually a below-average strikeout rate for a modern right-handed relief pitcher. When you're striking out, I'm just doing the math in my head here, about 21, 22% of the batters you faced, you're losing ground as a right-handed reliever. So I think if you're the White Sox, you want to leverage the ERA and the saves, get whatever B-minus prospect you can get. And if you've got to fill those 60 innings next year, you go ahead and do it in the market, or you do it with, you know, you make Dylan Covey a reliever, and all of a sudden he turns into next year's Story or something.
Joe, let's just spitball here a little bit, but I've been kind of interested in what the White Sox could add potentially at this deadline. And if the Diamondbacks, I mean, granted, that NL West thing is all getting kind of juicy now, but if the Diamondbacks get themselves into a selling position, I'm wondering if the White Sox, granted they haven't shown a lot of precedent to do this, but you could take that entire Zach Greinke contract, because you're not paying anybody else. You've got a bunch of dudes that you've got to get back and healthy into the rotation this next season anyway, and if the prospect price is lower than it might be for other teams because you're willing to eat as much money on Greinke as possible, I'm interested by it. I wonder if you are.
You know, as I got up this morning and I went and had a nice big breakfast, I kind of checked out of baseball for a couple of hours, and I didn't hear that the White Sox had been sold. They have a new owner now? That's great. Yes. And whoever the new owner is, I hope he goes ahead and does this. That's something Jerry Reinsdorf never would have
done. I know.
That's a great plan, Connor. I'm absolutely on board, and I'm excited for the future of the White Sox under their new owners.
I don't know if you saw the series of tweets that Matthew Trueblood sent out, and he started by noting that Strope being bad is just not – you don't need a high-leverage reliever to become untrustworthy in late July when you've already gone down and spent money on Craig Kimbrel because of the Zobrist money being available. But he said, in his word, I'm paraphrasing here, he said, think bigger. He said that you got to swallow hard and go for a big-name star that affects your depth in a way that it puts somebody, you know, on the back of the bench or gets somebody off the team completely. He said Syndergaard. He said Gallo. He said one of these other guys that becomes available. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think one of the issues is the Cubs are the type of team that it's hard to fit. Like, you hear names like Castellanos. And how much better does Nicholas Castellanos make the Chicago Cubs over a one-month, two-month period? With any of these guys, you're playing the lottery, right? Because any hitter can go nuts or be terrible over 2 months. And I think Matthew's idea is correct, where you say, hey, look, don't look for the half-win upgrade over 2 months or one-win upgrade. Go out and try to make the move that locks up the division and that really improves you in the postseason. And I really like that thinking. You know, Matthew does a lot of writing, not just at Prospectus, but in his own newsletter, Penning Bull. People should check that out.
Yeah, cool.
And I like the way he thinks. That's really a great, aggressive idea. If you're the Cubs, you know, your top prospect is a second baseman. You can make the argument that because of what your window is, maybe you can go ahead and put Horner out there. Make the argument that because you have four starters locked up for next year, I don't think Hamill's assigned, I think everybody else is, you can put an Alzolay out there, knowing that you've got pretty much your rotation set up. I think the Cubs want to be aggressive. I've said I don't think they'll do that, which puts them at a deficit relative to teams with deeper farm systems. Like, the Dodgers can get anybody they want. The Padres can get anybody they want. The Rays can get anybody they want. Whether those teams will do that or not is another question. I think the Cubs could not battle those teams that came to a prospect face-off, but if they have a greater willingness to trade their top guys, I think it puts them in play for pitchers like that.
Do you, Joe, going back to what the Cubs actually do have on hand, I don't want to get too far ahead in the trade deadline yet. Do you see Pedro Strop's issues this year as being correctable? And when you go ahead and plan out the rest of the season, do you allow yourself at all to think about Brandon Morrow featuring in this Cubs bullpen?
Well, I forgot Brandon Morrow existed.
Yeah, me too. I got to remind myself every morning.
It's been over a year now since he pitched, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Morrow is he fits into that category of pitchers I love, which is unavailable or great. Brandon Morrow isn't likely to show up and post a 4.7 ERA and a 4.8 FIP. If he's healthy, if he's available, he's probably going to be very good. And I remember the Yankees used to do this with Jeff Nelson. Jeff Nelson would be given like a 3-month vacation in the middle of every season, and he'd show up in September, have like four good outings, and be wiped out in October. And I think if you're the Cubs, you kind of look and say, hey, look, that could be our guy. Let him get as healthy as possible, and if we get 5 outings out of him at the end of the year, but he's available for the playoffs, that's a huge win. And yeah, I think you've got to hope for that, especially, like I say, this is a bullpen that doesn't strike guys out. The Rockies are the only bullpen in the National League that's less likely to get a strikeout out of its relievers. So Brandon Morrow would be a huge asset for them.
See, now you're doing it to me. See, now you see, I had put him in like a category, like you say, non-existent, where I didn't think about him. But now you're allowing me to be tantalized by the possibility again, Joe. I don't want to do that.
I feel like I come out here and I beat up the Cubs. Let's have a little bit of hope.
Now, you wrote about Mike Trout, and it was interesting stuff. This is the concluding paragraph, and I'm going to use it as a jumping-off point, actually, because this is yet another time where I find that we spend time having to remind even avid sports fans about the presence of maybe the best baseball player ever currently at the peak of his powers right damn now. And you wrote, Mike Trout is great no matter what he hits over a given week or month or half. As a fan, though, this is you, I would like to see him have the kind of stretch that helps define him for a larger sports world that still doesn't seem to get how great he is. High floors are valuable, but it's breaking through the ceiling that gets people to look. What did you mean by that?
Trout's never had Christian Yelich's second half from last year. He's never had the kind of year that gets you, I mean, I don't want to say, you use SportsCenter, and you know what I mean by that. It's almost a metaphor at this point, but the kind of second half that leads SportsCenter. It's unlikely that Trout's going to be able to lead the Angels to a division title because they're chasing the Astros, and they're 1,000 games back, and they have no pitching. But just to have the kind of, like, 1,300 OPS second half, hit 380 with 1,000 slugging or whatever, that kind of gets everybody talking. He's just never had that. If you look at his career, he's had two halves of his 15 halves now that have been a 200 weighted runs created plus, basically hit really well. And you look at the guys on that list, and he's lost MVP awards to players on that list who've had that kind of attention-getting half. Mookie Betts is on there. Josh Donaldson is on there. And Trout just has the highest floor in baseball. He's never bad. He's never bad for more than like a couple of weeks at a time. But he's never kind of just, you know, had that peak where, you know, the way Ted Williams had a 41, the way you look at, you know, Babe Ruth, you go back that far. Guys have just had these otherworldly stretches, Barry Bonds. Pretty much all of the best halves in baseball are Williams, Ruth, and Bonds. And it would just be great to have Trout hit 380 with monster power and just show everybody this is what it looks like when the greatest player who ever lived goes ham for 2 months.
Joe, you mentioned you feel like you come on here and bash the Cubs a little bit. I have optimism about them. I think they're the best team in the NL Central. And I would rather be them than the Brewers at this point, with Brandon Woodruff going to miss 6 weeks or so with the oblique injury. If you're making decisions for Milwaukee, are you adding at this point, given the injuries that you've had, just kind of assail all the arms in that pen and rotation?
They're another team. Remember, that bullpen was great last year. Uh-huh. You know, we saw Jeremy Jeffress blow the game last night. It's now basically Josh Hader and the Haterettes. You know, Corbin Burns falling apart has hurt them tremendously. Jeffress not repeating, losing Corey Knebel. I think they're another team that, you know, go out, add a reliever or two. They could really use a starter. That guy's not there. I don't think they have what it takes. It's not a great system once you get past Eura. Do they have what it takes to get a Matthew Boyd or a Marcus Stroman? Those guys are not only effective now, but they're controllable, and that raises the price on them. I think it's a tough spot for a team that really, you can't argue, the Brewers have gone absolutely all out the last couple of years. This isn't an unwillingness of ownership. This isn't the front office hugging its prospects, but things have just gone very wrong for them this year. And you know, last year, they were over their skis a bit. This year, they're seeing kind of the other end of it. I think you make minor moves if you're them, but I don't think you have the bullets to make the major move. And you kind of, to some extent, you got to play the cards you're dealt.
We're talking with Joe Sheehan on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. He of Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, the Joe Sheehan newsletter. Follow him on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. We've talked a lot about the book, The MVP Machine, about the way players are developed now. When you started talking before about comparing the Cubs to the Dodgers and Astros and these organizations that have so much more value in a prospect face-off or showdown, how aggressively do you think some teams now are reevaluating their entire system using the modern technology, using the Astros' idea of rethinking how you find value in pitchers to maybe determine the found money, to find guys like the Cubs have found Robel Garcia this year? Like, where is the inefficiency in one's own system, and how aggressive, how detailed is the process of figuring out where you may have misevaluated or underevaluated guys?
I think it's like where Moneyball was or statistical analysis was 10, 15 years ago, where there's a spread. But the spread is probably not as wide even. I think even the lesser teams at that, but let's put the Marlins in their own universe. But you know, it's whoever you want to say the 29th team is closer to the Dodgers than, say, the 29th team was to the A's, you know, when Moneyball came out. It's a narrower focus. The game has collectively gotten smarter. So the curve has shifted. And I'm fascinated, and I want to kind of get to this week in the newsletter. Remember last year, the Ryan Pressly trade? Ryan Pressly was a reliever for the Twins. He'd been good. He was having his best year. The Astros got him. This is actually, I believe this is a story in the MVP machine, mm-hmm. basically said, we want you to do this, this, and this. And Ryan Pressly didn't give up a run for the next, like, 9 months. I'm curious to see who those organizations go for at this deadline. Who are the guys we're not looking at yet, but they are looking at, and they're going to trade for somebody, and we're going to go, really? And that guy's going to go out and have a 0.5 ERA.
Because they're going to tell that guy, stop throwing your sinker, only throw your curveball.
Right. We've looked at you, or they're going to sit him in front of an Edgetronic or a Rapsodo, and they're going to say, if you make this particular thing with your hand, you're going to make your slider this much more effective. That's the whole point of that book, is saying players are no longer fixed sets of talents. We can change players in ways that we didn't know we could 10 years ago. So, yeah, those are the organizations I want to watch. And I do think that those teams are at the forefront. But if you tell me it's the Twins this year, you know, remember, they brought in Wes Johnson. They started using these cameras. They started using a lot more technology. If the Twins go out and get a reliever, that's somebody I'm going to be looking at and saying, hey, what do they know about him? What do they think they can do about him? The Yankees, not sure they're in the market for a reliever, but the same thing. If the Yankees go out and get a pitcher, I want to keep an eye on that guy. There are organizations right now. It's like you sit down at the poker table, right? Maybe that's not even the best analogy. You're in a fantasy league, and there's one guy you don't want to trade with, because if he wants your player, he knows something you don't.
Speaking of the Astros, should we be making bigger news of the fact that they have three starters in their rotation right now, that they only have Verlander, Cole, and Miley, who have made over 20 starts this year? Brad Peacock has made 15, but he's on the injured list right now. They're essentially working a three-man rotation, are they not?
They clinched the division, what, April 14th or so?
Yeah, give or take.
That's part of the – they can – I mean, even last year, the A's caught them at one point and tied them. But I think they played the whole year saying, hey, let's be good on October 1st. And, you know, it worked out for them. Obviously, they lost in the LCS – or excuse me, in the division series. But I think their play of, look, let's just get through the season. And remember, they've had a lot of things go wrong this year. McHugh blew up, and I still think McHugh can be a good starter. Brad Peacock was pitching well. He got hurt. Forrest Whitley's lack of development has really hurt them. Yeah. Whitley was supposed to be in the rotation this year. I want to say he had a shoulder injury, and the command's not been there. He's had a real – remember, he lost a lot of last year to being popped for a drug test as well. So, you know, he's all of a sudden well off the track. J.B. Buskauskas is the next pitching prospect through this system. He's not ready yet. I think they'll go out and get innings guys, maybe find somebody to fill that. But I think if you're the Astros, you look and say, hey, look, we know that in a playoff series, you go Verlander, Cole, Miley, and if we've got to go to a fourth starter, we can fake it with like a bullpen-type game with whether it's Framber Valdez or, you know, maybe if Peacock's back and healthy, maybe it's McHugh. I don't think they're that worried.
Joe, thank you as always, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That is Joe Sheehan on the Bernstein and McKnight Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.